Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to another edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me as always is Jasmine Smith. Say hello, Jasmine.
Hey, Robert.
All right. This week on the podcast, we're going to be talking about taxes, which is everybody's favorite topic, right, Jasmine?
Ugh.
Jasmine doesn't like taxes. Do you not like paying taxes, or do you not like tax policy generally, or just the whole subject just bothers you?
I think it's the whole subject. I took tax in law school. It was by far my least favorite course. It was awful. Awful exam. Good professor, but I just wasn't good at it.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about taxes today, and then we'll talk to you a little bit about some news. Some stuff about the Board of Education, charter schools update from last week, and then some other stuff. So, all right, Jasmine, without any further ado, let's get into taxes.
Go for it.
Okay, Jasmine, so I know that this is not anybody's favorite subject, and I think that because of that, people don't typically have any amount of baseline knowledge about taxes. So the first thing I want to do is to catch everybody up about how taxes in Kentucky even work.
That's probably a good idea. I don't think a lot of people know.
So the first thing you should know, which hopefully you do, is that Kentucky levies an income tax. So if you know anything about income taxes, they often have brackets. So there's always jokes, a lot of hip-hop lyrics about tax brackets, but there are six tax brackets in Kentucky. Really, four of those apply to people who make less than $8,000 in taxable income. It's tough not to make more than $8,000. So really, there's two tax brackets. Anybody who makes from between $8,000 and $75,000, and then $75,000 plus. And the difference is not much at all. So there's $8,000 to $75,000, you get taxed at 5.8%, and $75,000 plus, you're taxed at 6%. So there's really a 0.2% difference between those two rates. There's six tax brackets, but it's basically a flat tax, which if you know anything about flat taxes, it's everybody gets charged
the same rate.
Kentucky seems to have a graduated income tax, but it doesn't really. It pretty much has a flat tax at about 6%. Something that is different between Kentucky's state income tax and the federal income tax is that capital gains are treated as regular income. That's very different in the federal government.
Right. The federal tax code, there's different tax treatment for capital gains.
Yeah, they get taxed at a completely different rate, and there's a whole different structure for that. But in Kentucky, capital gains are regular income, so you get taxed at the same rate. Kentucky also offers tax credits for child independent care and a low-income family size tax credit, which is a little bit like the federal earned income tax credit, but only kind of. If you know somebody who's an expert in the EITC, they will tell you that, no, that is not the same. But I am not an expert in the EITC, so to me, it looks pretty much the same. Another thing about income taxes is that Kentucky localities, so a lot of counties, some cities, they can levy what's called an occupational tax. So that is a tax on wages, which is not necessarily income. So income, if you do your taxes, you know that you have deductions, you have credits and such, and those can impact your wages to come up with your actual income. If you tax wages, you get no deductions, you get no credits, you just get taxed on your wages. So very simple way to tax it. And it's kind of interesting because I would have thought that the occupational taxes would have been higher in urban areas with a lot more
Louisville,
social services.
Lexington.
The highest rates of occupational taxes are Bellevue and Winchester.
So. Okay, I know where Winchester is. That's a little bit east of Lexington. Where's Bellevue? Is that eastern Kentucky?
I don't know, but I think so. It's a place I'm not very clear about where it is. Okay. If we got any listeners in Bellevue, shout us out. Tell us where you are.
Sorry we don't know about you.
Yeah. Okay, so that's enough about Kentucky's income tax. So pretty much a flat income tax plus occupational rates, capital gains, the same as income. The next thing you need to know about is the sales tax. You probably pay the sales tax every day. It's 6% on all items except for unprepared food and pharmaceuticals. Jasmine, do you know about the sales tax? You know about the sales tax, right?
Right. It's on your receipt every time you buy stuff. 6% in Kentucky.
I remember being a kid and like saving up my money to buy probably Pokemon cards or something. And no, I was too old for that. I don't know, buying something when I was...
I didn't buy Pokemon. Too old.
Too old for that. Now, something I bought when I was like a really little kid, like I was 4 or 5, and I saw the price that was marked.
Some Hot Wheels
or something. Yeah, something like that. And I went up to buy it, and I was like, had just enough money, and they were like, hey, kid, you don't have enough money. And I was like, sales taxes! And that was my introduction to sales taxes. It's a 6% on every item that you pay, except for unprepared food and pharmaceuticals. And then one other thing about Kentucky's sales tax is that unlike many other states, Kentucky does not allow localities to levy additional sales taxes. So Louisville, if you remember the most recent election when Republicans took over the House of Representatives, Mayor Greg Fisher, who is a Democrat in Louisville, the mayor of Louisville, he was like, maybe that's not such a bad thing because he is a big supporter of the local option sales tax, which would allow localities like Louisville to increase their sales tax by a small percentage for certain projects. And he thought the Republicans might be more likely to do that. So the LOST, the LOST, the local option sales tax, is something that's been advocated in Kentucky for a while. But unlike many other states, Kentucky does not allow something like that to happen. Okay, so we have income taxes and we have sales taxes. The next tax that's very important is property taxes. Kentucky has some of the lowest property taxes in the whole country. The effective rate across the state is about 0.82%, but the number can be bigger or smaller depending on where you live. Like the occupational tax that we talked about earlier, the urban-rural split doesn't really exist. There isn't really an urban-rural split. The highest property tax rate is in Campbell County, which is one of the three Northern Kentucky.
Right.
Yeah, and the lowest one is in Martin County. Just looking at the information, Louisville didn't have the highest, Lexington didn't have the highest, and there were also some rural counties that had very high property taxes. It's very interesting how it all splits out. But on the whole, Kentucky's property taxes is 0.82%, and most of those property taxes go towards funding schools. Okay, those are the three big ones, and those are the three big ones in every state. You have your income tax, your sales tax, and your property tax. Not every state has all three of those, but many states do, and those make up the big chunk of revenue. There are, though, several other smaller sources of tax revenue. There's an inheritance tax in Kentucky. If you know many people who do not like the inheritance tax, some people will call it a death tax. Inheritance tax is very complicated, but if you leave more than $1,000 to a relative who is not your spouse, parent, child, grandchild, brother, sister, half-brother, or half-sister, the inheritance will be taxed somewhere between 4 and 16%. So, Jasmine, if you die soon, which I hope you don't because then I won't have a podcast, I don't know, that'd be very sad. We would all be very sad. But if you have more than $1,000, be sure to leave it to one of those people so that it doesn't get taxed. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. That's one tax. And then there's also sin taxes. One of them is on alcohol. Alcohol is taxed actually very highly in Kentucky. $1.92 per gallon and 11% on wholesale sales, which is, yeah, there's one of the highest in the country. And there's also a tax on cigarettes. So there's 60 cents on a pack of cigarettes, which is very low. So we have sin taxes very high on alcohol, very low on cigarettes, which...
kind of weird.
It is kind of weird, but Kentucky for a very, very long time grew a lot of tobacco, and that was one of the reasons we had low cigarette taxes. So there you go. Okay, so that's the taxes in Kentucky. We have income tax, sales tax, property tax, and other taxes. So what does this all mean? From a policy standpoint, what do liberals want? Liberal tax policy wants taxes to be more progressive. Jasmine, do you know what that means?
That means that the more you make, the larger tax burden that you have.
Exactly. A higher tax burden on people who make more money. The easiest way to have a more progressive tax structure is to have an income tax, have a very progressive income tax. By introducing more tax brackets at higher rates, you can receive more tax income from rich people. Liberals tend to dislike sales taxes. Can you guess why, Jasmine?
Because that's like a flat tax?
Kind of. So everybody has to essentially buy clothes, shelter, food, etc.
Basic things, all basic needs.
And if you make less money, a larger portion of your income will be towards buying things that you need, and you won't be able to save as much. Sales taxes tend to hit poor people harder, and so that's why liberals tend not to like sales taxes. They hit the poor a disproportionate amount. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what liberals want. More progressive income taxes, less sales taxes, which are disproportionately hit the poor. What do conservatives want? So conservatives feel that income taxes reduce the incentive to work. The logic here is that if you work more, you make less money. So if you get into a higher tax bracket, the government takes more of your money, so the raise isn't even worth as much, so why even work in the first place? And obviously that's a pronounced example, but I mean, does that logic make sense to you, Jasmine?
Not to me personally.
Yeah. I don't agree with it either, but that's the logic there, that by disincentivizing work, you hurt the productivity of workers, and so they want to do less income taxes. Conservatives prefer consumption taxes, which are like sales taxes, and they believe that taxing what people spend means that people will work more than they would otherwise and save more. You know, the taxes get hit on you once you spend the money. You're less likely to spend the money and save the money, which then is better practice for people being in better financial health. Does that make sense from a logic standpoint?
Right. So they're saying that people won't spend as much money because they don't want to pay the sales tax, so they'll save that money.
They'll save it, yeah. And that's good for whatever reason that might be there. So that's why conservatives think what they think and why liberals think what they think, and you can make your own decision. We have certainly made ours. So the last thing about this, there are some people out there that prefer a flat income tax, which is an income tax that is assessed at the same rate across the board. Kentucky essentially has a flat income tax, in my opinion. There are some people that say a single income tax rate across all incomes is fair. And that's an argument you can make. You can say, hey, it's more fair to tax people at a flat rate across all incomes. You don't want to have a graduated income tax, and that's more fair. And that's an argument you can make. That's fine. There are other people who argue for a flat tax because they say it would be simpler, but that's stupid. The reason why I think that's stupid is because it is not very hard at all to figure out how income tax brackets work. The hardest thing to figure out is what your income actually is, because you have a bunch of deductions, a bunch of credits. That's the complicated part. If you wanted to get rid of those and just essentially have an occupational tax, that would be one thing you could do. But a flat tax by and of itself does not accomplish that goal. So does that make sense, Jasmine?
Right. You're saying that it doesn't make it any simpler because the difficult part is actually figuring out what bracket you're in because of all your deductions, credits, and all of those kind of things.
Yes, and that actually brings up an interesting point that we should probably address. Tax brackets do not necessarily mean that you get taxed all of your money at the same rate.
Right.
Right. You get taxed the dollars that you make in that bracket. So in Kentucky, there is a bracket from $0 to $5,000. So taxes from $0 to $5,000 get taxed at 5%. So everybody's first $5,000 get taxed 5%. So that's, what's 1% of 5,000? 50 times 5? So $250 was your first $5,000. Everybody pays that $250. And then from $5,000 to $6,000, it's 6%. So 6% on $1,000. And then 7% on the next $1,000. You aren't taxed at the same
rate. Even within your own bracket.
Right. I hope that makes sense. It is hard to explain.
I'm trying here.
This is why Jasmine doesn't like to talk about taxes. Okay, so who pays taxes in Kentucky? If liberals got their way, the rich would pay more in taxes. And if conservatives got their way, they would be pretty much even across the board. So in Kentucky, how does it work? Okay, so the top 1% pays about 6% of their family income to state taxes. The next 4%, so 2 through 5%, pays 7.4%. So the 2 through 5% people pay more in their income than the top 1%. The middle 20%, so right in the middle, the people who make an average amount, they pay 10.8% of their income in taxes. So they pay a lot more than the top 1%. Not quite double, but almost. And then the lowest 20%, which is people who make less than $16,000, they pay 9% in taxes. So the lowest 20% pay a higher share of their income than the top 1%. But it's very hard, if you have a sales tax, to get that number to be different than that. It's very hard to tax very rich people if you don't have a very graduated income tax, which Kentucky doesn't, and you have a sales tax. So given all of the things that happen in Kentucky, this doesn't surprise many people, and it isn't necessarily the most conservative structure in the country. It's not as bad as many, many other states. So just in case you wanted to know, that's who pays taxes in Kentucky. Okay, Jasmine, so what does the future hold? The reason we're talking about this is because the Republicans have been elected in Kentucky, and they have the entire legislature in their pocket and the governorship. So it looks like Kentucky is likely to enact a much more conservative tax policy soon. So what does that might look like? So we talked about the income tax. There's 7 states that have no income tax whatsoever. Those are Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming. These states have to make up that revenue in other ways. Tennessee has an average sales tax rate of 9.75%. So 7% from the state, plus they actually have those local sales taxes.
Don't they have, like, a one day a year no sales tax day or something like that.
Yeah,
I feel like I've heard about these things in other states.
Most states that have a really high sales tax like this, they do have days like that usually around the school calendar, so you can buy like your school supplies and stuff without sales taxes and clothes and stuff. But yeah, those type of holidays do typically exist so that people don't get completely soaked, especially the people who don't make much money. So you can make it up in sales taxes. New Hampshire has a very high property tax rate, and Washington has a very expensive gasoline tax. So those places have to make it up in other places. The state that I think Kentucky is most likely to emulate if they are to switch around their taxes in Kentucky is Kansas. So Jasmine, do you know anything about Kansas and taxes?
No. The only thing I really know about Kansas is the basketball team.
They have a good basketball
team.
That's
about it.
That's true. We do have that in common with them. In Kansas, there has been a lot that's happened in taxes since this decade began. So Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas was elected in 2010. It was the big Tea Party revolution at that point, if you'll remember 2010. and he was ushered in and supported and helped to pass a massive income tax cut designed by conservative economists Arthur Laffer and Stephen Moore. Stephen Moore is also big in the Trump campaign, and you may know Arthur Laffer from the Laffer Curve, which was, I think, talked about on Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I vaguely remember that name.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of familiar.
You know that part at the beginning of Ferris Bueller's Day Off with Ben Stein when he's like, Bueller?
Yeah.
That had the Laffer Curve.
Ah.
So there you go. In Kansas, what they did, they cut the top tax rate from 6%, which is Kentucky's top tax rate, to 4.6%, which is a massive cut. That's like 25% cut. And they raised the sales tax at the same time, which is a conservative thing to do. Less income tax, more sales tax. So the results have been that Kansas has seen its bond rating lowered, which makes it more expensive to borrow money for capital projects. It's significantly reduced tax receipts, which seems obvious, but it's worth pointing out because that isn't what the Laffer Curve says might happen. And it also requires cutting social services. So in Kansas, they've had to cut a lot of those. And I mean, people depend on those. So you're essentially raising taxes on poor people and taking away social services. And also completely depleted the rainy day fund in Kansas. Rainy day funds are typically used in recessions when your tax receipts go down so that you have something to like bridge the gap with. So there hasn't been a recession since 2010. So they've depleted their rainy day fund totally without a recession. So when a recession actually comes, they'll be in a tough place. But on the other hand, total employment has increased by 2.6%, and private sector employment has increased by 3.5%, and GDP in Kansas has increased 4.8%. The people who designed this tax cut were like, that's going to happen. You're going to have more employment, way more private sector employment, and your GDP is going to go up. But one thing to notice is that even though total employment increased by 2.6%, there was a 6.5% increase in employment nationally. Private sector employment went up 3.5%. Nationally, it went up 7.6%. And GDP went up 4.8%. And nationally, it went up 11.9%. So it didn't do as well as the national average. So seems bad. There are people who will defend this tax cut. They will say Kansas was doing way worse than the national average before. They're catching up. They're getting closer, et cetera, et cetera. You can make your own decision. So Governor Brownback was reelected after these tax cuts in 2014, but it was a really close race. It won by 4% in Kansas, which is one of the most conservative states in the whole country. And this year, so 2016, the elections that just happened, Governor Brownback's coalition and the legislature completely fell apart. Democrats did gain some seats in both the House and Senate, but really what happened was moderate Republicans gained a whole bunch of seats. So the Democrats, they're like, the Kansans were like, nah, we don't want you Democrats, but we do want other Republicans. So it's likely that a new coalition of moderate Republicans and Democrat legislators will choose the leadership of the legislature this year. So it still stands to be seen, but it does look like Kansas voted against these big tax cuts. It's really difficult to tell what will be done in Kentucky. We haven't seen any plans from Governor Bevin or the Republican legislature yet. We'll see what they learn from Kansas, but it does seem like that we will have less income tax and more sales tax, which will result in less tax revenue. It will be hard to tell what impact that this will have on social services, pensions, and all sorts of other things, but that looks to be like where we're headed. Jasmine, do you know anything about taxes now?
I feel like I know a lot more than I knew before.
Yeah, I feel like I talked a lot. Do you?
That's okay. All right. I feel like this is a topic where you need to just talk a lot and explain it.
Well, I hope so.
I don't mind sitting here.
Yeah.
Quietly listening.
It's been wild.
It's hard to explain some of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so the Kansas stuff is pretty crazy. To me, it's very definitely bad. And
right, all of those things sounded really bad.
Yeah, there isn't much. So, if anybody's curious, I got a lot of this information for the Center for Budget Priorities. CBPP? Yeah, Center for Budget Priorities. There you go. They have a lot of information there. They are pretty liberal, so that is something to know. They have been talking about this tax cut since it was implemented. They're very worried about it, and they were very carefully documenting all the things that happened because of that tax cut. So they thought that bad stuff would happen. Bad stuff happened. So I think it'll be interesting in Kentucky to see what lessons from Kansas are learned. This is the first time that a big, huge majority of Republicans has been ushered in probably since then, with people who are willing to start looking at taxes. So it'll be interesting to see what they do that's similar to Kansas and what they might do that's different from Kansas. So be on the lookout for that kind of stuff.
Is that coming up in the next legislative session?
Governor Bevin has said he definitely wants to address taxes this year, and he has even hinted he may call for a special session to address tax policy.
So we may know sooner rather than later what's going to happen with tax policy.
On the odd years, Kentucky has a shorter legislative session. They don't have to pass a budget, but they can do other things. Not a lot typically gets done in those years, but they may call it back into special session. All right, Jasmine, tell us about some news.
Okay, we've got an update on charter school legislation in Kentucky. So yesterday, the Kentucky Board of Education, so that's the State Board of Education, they had a day-long meeting where they listened to hours of testimony about charter schools. The board plans to examine other states' charter school laws and come to a consensus in December before the 2017 legislative session. They didn't really come to a position on it yesterday. They are just trying to get all the information and research that they can, and they hope to decide what their position is in December. So the board saw a lot of stuff yesterday. They looked at charter schools that are doing well as those that are underperforming. They also looked at how charter schools and charter school legislation varied from state to state, and they looked at startups versus conversions. Do you know what that means?
Not a clue. Tell me what that means.
Okay. A startup is a school that starts
anew,
right?
So they
start
it.
A new school. They build a new school. A conversion is a traditional public school that gets converted into a charter school.
Gotcha.
So they were looking at the difference between those, how conversions are doing versus how startups are doing, those kind of things. Among the presenters yesterday was the Pritchard Committee. And the Pritchard Committee is a private nonprofit advocacy group that strives to improve public education on all levels.
Very important in Kentucky.
Right.
They were big with the education reforms in the 90s. So yes.
And so the Pritchard Committee and the board neither really stated a position at the end of the meeting. So though they haven't come to a consensus yet, it seemed that there was some disagreement on who should be able to authorize a charter school and hold it accountable.
Sure.
And so we kind of talked about that last week when we talked about who authorizes these schools. Would it be a local school board, some other kind of governing body or agency? And this was something that there seemed to be some disagreement about at this meeting yesterday. They looked at how other states are doing that. Most states, they are authorized by local school boards. Some states have multiple authorizing agencies, while others just have one authorizing body. Some states also allow higher ed institutions to authorize the charter schools, which
right.
I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Basically, yesterday they saw a lot of presentations, they looked at a lot of research, they looked at what other states are doing, and they are just taking it all in. The board kind of seemed to say, we know this is a reality, so we're just trying to get all the information we can because it's certainly happening. And some of the members of the board that spoke to the media yesterday expressed the belief that charter schools may help in closing the achievement gap, but that certainly charter schools alone won't fix it. I think that maybe some members got a positive view of charter schools, but they disagree about certain things, and we'll find out more about that when they meet in December, it sounds like.
Yeah. Seems like they're doing a lot of due diligence, which is important because it seemed like this is...
They know it's coming, so they might as well do all the research they can.
Right.
And then I've got a couple quick hits.
Quick
first, the University of Louisville and the University of Louisville Foundation credit ratings took a big hit.
That's not good.
Last week on Tuesday, Moody's Investor Service downgraded the credit ratings for both the university and the foundation, citing ongoing legal challenges and leadership changes that risk U of L's reputation and they distract from its mission. So we've talked about this a lot. There's a lot of shakeup going on at U of L. President Ramsey resigning, then Bevin reorganizing the boards, well, abolishing the board and appointing a new one, and then this case about the board that's going up to the Kentucky Supreme Court. So their credit ratings have taken a hit. They asked a Bevin spokesman about it, who said it's all Andy Beshear's fault, the attorney general.
Shocking.
She said that Beshear's politically motivated lawsuit is the root cause of all the uncertainty surrounding U of L and now this downgrade. But they didn't mention the audit that's happening of the
right.
foundation, and that there's been some things going on for years, it seems like, but they blamed it on Andy Beshear. So.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, the reason why credit rating downgrades are important is because that hurts your ability to borrow money. And so if
right.
U of L wants to like build a building, they're not going to pay like, you know, several million dollars up front to build that building. They're going to bond it out and then borrow the money. And if you have a lower rating for your credit, you have to pay a higher interest rate. So that essentially just takes money away from the university and debt service payments. The foundation is also a huge vehicle for entrepreneurship and investment in the community. They have a lot of stuff that they pay. Obviously, their credit rating going down hurts not just U of L, but a lot of the stuff in the city of Louisville. So that's not great.
Not good.
Not
no.
great. Yeah.
Continuing problems for the University of Louisville.
Right.
And finally, Kentucky's pension crisis continues as well. We talked about this very early on in our podcasting days. Robert told us about the pension crisis. Kentucky has been experiencing quite the pension crisis. The reason this is news this week is because there was a Herald Leader article stating that our unfunded pension liability has gone from $30.5 billion to $32.6 billion.
Oof.
And so, you know, we've talked about the pension crisis and that it comes from a number of factors, inadequate contributions from the state, and then unrealistic assumptions about the number of public employees, how much they'd earn, and how long they would live. So there's a lot of factors that have caused this crisis, and now it seems to be getting worse. Matt Bevin has committed to fully funding the contributions to put back into it. And then I believe that the General Assembly authorized over $900 million to go into the teachers' pension fund. So it may be getting better for teachers, but it may get a little bit worse before it gets better.
Yeah, and I'm literally just pulling this article up, Jasmine, about this subject where there is a lawsuit now. Teachers group is suing the state for underfunding Kentucky pensions. I don't really know. I'm literally just reading it. It involves one of my high school teachers. But it looks like that the people who receive pensions are unhappy, which, you know, makes sense to me because they've been woefully underfunded for years. So worse now than it was before. We'll see if the increased funding will help. I mean, the market obviously hasn't helped much this year, I guess.
Nope. Yeah. Bad news for U of L, bad news for pensions.
All right.
I don't come with a lot of good news in the quick hits today.
Right, and I mean, this subject relates back to the taxes because we need money to put into pensions, and if we reduce the amount of money we receive overall, that will reduce the amount of money that can go towards anything. So, yeah, that's tough. All right, Jasmine. Well, looks like we've reached the end of another episode. If you followed us on Twitter, which you should, at
@MyOldKYPod.
If you followed us there, you would have heard about the State Board of Education as it was going on. We were in conversations with Allison Ross, the education reporter at the Courier Journal, about this while it was happening. So it's good to follow us because you can see the stuff as it's going on. Follow us on Twitter. Also, like our Facebook page. We share things there. We shared a thing this week, an Economist story about a mosque in Lexington, which was kind of interesting, I thought. And, you know, you'll see stuff there that you may want
right.
to see.
We don't have time to talk about everything that happens. So.
Yeah, there was another really interesting thing in Governing Magazine about social workers in Kentucky. That was also really interesting. So yeah, like us on Facebook and see stuff that's going on. And also, you can connect with us by reading our show notes on Medium and mash that subscribe button, fam, on on your podcasting app of choice to make sure that every week you hear what we have to say about Kentucky politics and policy. So, Jasmine, next week we're going to do social issues. issues.
Social issues.
Get
that's
ready.
Right.
People are going to like that one. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and I will see you next week. Good night.